You might like to turn in your Bible as we open prayer meeting, if you would, to Jeremiah and chapter 2. Jeremiah and chapter 2. And remember now, in our study, Jeremiah is a prophet, along with Isaiah and Daniel, among others, at the same time. And Josiah, when Jeremiah is prophet, is the king in Judah. And it's going to go a couple or three more, and then Nebuchadnezzar. And Josiah does everything he can to put things right. But the people have been set, as we said, 57 years, they've been going in the wrong direction. And they're used to it. And therefore, they are not going to go, even though the practice, Josiah the king, is going to try to do right, the people are not going to really follow. And therefore, the people, Josiah is told that all of his efforts are not going to detain any of the direction of where Israel is headed. Israel is headed for judgment. And thus, Jeremiah's assignment is to warn and awaken Israel. Judah, I should say. Israel has gone into captivity 100 years earlier by Assyria, the 10 tribes in the north. The two tribes in the south now are on the verge of the Babylonian captivity with Nebuchadnezzar coming in from the north. And now, having said that, so you have a little background, And you'd hope that somehow things would get better, but they aren't going to get better. They aren't going to. So now, having said that, and if you remember, we did over in chapter 2, in verse 1, 2, and 3, Israel is reminded by Jeremiah, and by the way, verse 4, "Hear ye the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob," that's the southern two tribes, "and all the families of the house of Israel that are scattered by the Assyrian captivity." So God is saying something to the whole nation of Israel, wherever they are, after the Assyrian captivity, who knows where they are, anyone, anywhere, Israel, pay attention. And thus, God reminded them of their wonderful beginning that they had. They were very, very, very special. They were to be a prized, precious nation. And God was going to honor them in a most prestigious, wonderful way. And if they would just follow it. And God reminds them that when they left Egypt, Passover, Exodus, and they went to Mount Sinai, from the time they left Mount Sinai, from the time they left the Exodus, Exodus 12, to Mount Sinai, they didn't rebel. There was no apostasy. There's murmuring, discontent, but no apostasy and no rebellion. Just people discontent with what's going on. And that was a wonderful time compared to Israel's future. A wonderful time. And God reminds them of that. And God is mindful of that. And God is looking for that time to reoccur. And it will happen after the tribulation, in the millennial reign of Christ. Israel, for the first time in their history as a nation, will have a heart for God. And the law of God will be written in their heart then. But now, here in Jeremiah has an assignment. We have an assignment to in our day in which we live. Jeremiah is telling them Nebuchadnezzar is approaching, And Nebuchadnezzar is going to come down once, twice, three times. And Jeremiah is there, the whole sequence. He says, he's coming. He comes down and down three times. The third time, remember, in 586, the city is leveled, the temple is torn down, everything happens. And so here's Jeremiah warning the Israelite. And here we are looking at the end of our day. And we aren't looking for a super-duper time. We're looking very biblically. We're looking for the Lord's return. And we understand that all the things that are happening in the world, and they are, all the things globally and otherwise, are all making for a change, a great change, a determined change in a different direction. Now, having said that, and we aren't going to stop that. We aren't going to stop that. We're to be here, and we're to biblically understand God's prophetic word. We ought to know what God is doing and what he's about to do. We ought not to be stupid about it. Now, we aren't going to broadcast it because people don't want to hear it necessarily. But we do need to understand it so that we can walk with God in the midst of it. And thus, that is our little lesson, if we can. Now, remember we shared together in verse 5, 6, 7, and 8 that Israel blamed God. They blamed God. Israel said, the reason we have problems, the reason this and that, is because of you, God. And remember, we did it in verse 5. Thus saith the Lord, what iniquity or wrongness have your fathers found in me? Where are you going to blame me for what's happening? And of course, they can't. And where is the Lord that brought us up? In verse 6. In verse 8, where is the Lord? The whole leadership of Israel was not interested in where God is. Is anyone interested in that in the absence of God? And no one was interested. And thus the people weren't interested. So now you come to verse 9. Verse 9. And when you come to verse 9, and you'll notice, wherefore, God has set the stage, he told them, all about the wonderful past that they had, the wonderful beginning they had. But now, what happens yesterday is in the past. You have to understand what's going to happen in the present time. And thus, 5, 6, 7, and 8, God, don't get after God. God said, by the way, verse 9, therefore, I will yet plead with you. I will yet plead with you. And here we are looking for God. And he's going to go and plead. And the word plead is to contend. It is to strive. And it always is involved, always involves legal. Like in a court. Go to court and you're contending in the court. You're striving in the court for a verdict, for a decision. And that's always that way. So now, wherefore will I yet? I am going to contend with you. I am going to strive with you. We're going to go to court. Are you ready to go? Are you ready to go? And that's Jeremiah is setting the stage for it, for the people of Israel, if they would hear, have an ear to hear. Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead. I'm going to contend. By the way, God said, you are guilty, and I'm going to go right down the line, and as your fathers, you are going to continue, and if you guys keep going, father, son, if you keep going, it's going to keep happening, and it's not going to get fixed, and it isn't going to get fixed until he comes. Once the Babylonian captivity took place, Israel was scattered. It went back under Nehemiah, Ezra. Titus scattered them, something fierce. Roman general, scattered them. And now they're back, May 1948, they're there, but just there. So they never got back, never had it back again. And so the children's children, and they still don't believe. I contend with you. Now, I'm going to just go over it quickly. I want you just to get a sense of what God is telling Israel and why he's saying it to them. So therefore, and then we'll try to take advantage of that if we can. Therefore, in verse 10, for pass over the isles of Kidim, and that is Cyprus. If you went out to Cyprus, the islands going west. Here's the Palestine, and you come west. Is that west? West. Going west. And you're coming west, and there's Cyprus and the islands. And you keep going, and there's Italy and Greece. Everything coming west. If you stood and Josiah and the people of Israel would look westward, they would see Cyprus, Italy, Greece coming across the Mediterranean Sea. And if they looked that way, and verse 10, for pass over the isles of Kittim and see and send unto Kedar and consider diligently. And Kedar is the Arabian desert, the Syrian Arabian desert. If you went from Palestine and crossed the Jordan, and there's Syria, Saudi Arabia, etc., going east. Thus, verse 10, and consider diligently as you look west and as you look east and see if there be such a thing. I want you to look and see if there's anywhere in all of your world, looking west and looking east, look at all the nations, all the people, all the history. I want you to make an observation. Israel, Judah, verse 11, hath a nation changed their gods? Hath a nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods? In other words, the nations take gods are the deities that are of the earth and heaven and all kinds of reasons for gods to be the god of the flowers, the god of the sun, god of the power, and gods, they have all their gods. And the gods are part of the nation. The nation is identified by their gods, they were. And so the gods were very important. And they may, when a country took over another, empire took over another, they would change the name, but the gods were the same. And so you just change the name a bit, but the gods are the same. And thus all the gods are there. And so as you would proceed, they have all their gods. And they would adapt new gods. They didn't throw away gods. They would add gods, but they wouldn't throw them away. You wouldn't throw away a god. Have you ever heard, said God, to Israel? Did you ever hear of any nation, west, east, anywhere you want to go, did you ever hear a nation that forsook their gods, which are no gods at all? They aren't even God. They aren't God. And they hang on to them, Zeus and Minerva and Jupiter and all of them. Hang on to them. They aren't even gods, and they don't let them go. Have you ever heard of this anywhere by anybody, said God? Verse 11, hath a nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods? But my people have changed their glory for that which hath not profit, which is useless, absolutely useless. It has no profit to it, not a drop. And thus there is no value, no profit, no gain, no use, no value. It's useless. You have given up the glory, and you know, hang on for a sec, hold your finger there, and go over with me to Psalm 106, as you know. 106. And in Psalm 106, picking up, please, directly if I can, in verse 19, rehearsing the history of Israel. And remember the marked event in the history of Israel is when they made the golden calf, and that curse, that which they did, would never leave them. It would always be on their head what they did. How far will you go in substituting God for something? And you would go and make a calf, like the Egyptians, a golden calf out of gold, and you would go that far to take God and narrow him down to a golden calf. Would you go that far and then worship it and have the calf replace me, said God? Have you ever seen a nation that would do that? No nation gets rid of their gods. But Israel, who has the true God and the only God, puts him aside. Now, so here in Psalm 106, verse 19, they made a calf in Horeb, Mount Sinai, and worshiped the molten image. Thus they changed, there's your verb, they changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. And they have gone and taken God, the glory of God, Almighty God, the glory God, God, the glory of God is God himself, the Shekinah glory, God himself. Now, that's what they did. Now, back over, hold your finger in Jeremiah, and go with me over to Hosea. Hosea. In Hosea chapter 8, in Hosea chapter 8, picking up, what did they do 100 years earlier? Remember the golden calf? It would never go away. And what did they do when they broke away from Israel, the 10 tribes under Jeroboam? They went and made a couple of golden calves to worship. Here's Jerusalem, but now we have Dan, Bethel, we have our golden calves. Watch. Hosea chapter 8, picking up in verse 5. Thy calf, O Samaria, hath cast thee off. Thine anger is kindled against them. How long will it be ere they attain to innocency? For from Israel was it also, the workman made it. Therefore, it is not God. If you can make it, it isn't God. But the calf of Samaria shall be broken in pieces. So here they were, they're going, and they have gone and substituted God's wonderful person, presence, power, which we looked at, which we're trying to exercise. Here you are, God, and they moved you down and shrunk you into a golden calf, and could put it on their dashboard, could put it in their backyard, could put it in their living room. They made themselves God. Have you ever heard of such a thing? The world doesn't even do that. Religion doesn't do that in the pagan sense, the nations, when nations had a lot of gods. So now, having said that, the end of verse 11, change their glory for that which doth not profit. Useless, absolutely of no value whatsoever. So there's no, it's unprofitable. And so, in verse 12, be astonished. Heavens are the witness. Heavens bear witness to who he is. Hold your finger again here. And go over to Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1. And you remember, God uses it very often. He says, listen, the humans aren't paying attention. I want you to know all the creation that I made. I want all creation to make note. Remember, he said a wonderful little thought on his way into Jerusalem to be crucified. He said, remember, they said they're all saying a whole lot and doing a whole lot of things. And he said, let them do it, even if it isn't from their heart. Let them do it. If they don't do it, the stones will cry out. The stones have a record. The stones will cry out. So now, here's all of the heavens, Isaiah chapter 1, in verse 2. Israel is in a terrible place. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth. Why? For the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The ox knoweth his master, etc. There you are. Now, here they are. They all know. And verse, God, you're going to say it. Jeremiah's assignment, he's going to tell Israel. Verse 12. Be astonished. Be astonished, dismayed, O ye heavens, at this. Be horribly afraid. And the word horribly afraid is the word to shudder, to shake. Shudder, shudder. And it's used of making being so disturbed, terrified, that your hair would stand on end. Your hair would stand on end is the word. Heavens, I want you to be caught up in this terrible, terrible thing that's happening. Israel has substituted no God for God. And they've done a vain, non-profitable, useless, terrible thing. Now, and the end of verse 12 has one more. And be very desolate, exceedingly dried up, parched. I want you to, the clouds, there's no moisture up in the air, no moisture in the sky. Be all dried out. Be all dried out. Shudder, shudder, O heavens. Awaken, be witnesses to this now. Now, if I can, for what? Verse 13. For my people have committed two evils. People have committed them. They've abandoned life on the one hand, and they have a great zeal for the idolatry. For my people have committed two evils. We looked at the word on Sunday. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. The first thing they have done, they have forsaken me. They have abandoned me, said God. I'm the only God there is. And without me, they have nothing. And so they have forsaken me, God, all that I am and all that I would be to them, all the preciousness, how I kept them. My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. I am the source of the bubbling, just think of a spring, if you would, coming up out of the ground, and the water's bubbling and bubbling out and gushing out as it comes out of the ground fresh. It's the expression, the term, fountain of living waters. Over, if you would, while you're here, right here in Jeremiah, over to chapter 17. And in chapter 17, picking up, please, in thought. Chapter 17, going to verse 13. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all that forsake thee shall be ashamed, and they that depart from me shall be written in the earth, because they have forsaken the Lord, the fountain of living waters. And you remember, if you read in Isaiah 12 and all of that, that in the millennium, he is a fountain. What do you know from John 4 and John 7 and that? He'll become in you a well of water springing up into what? Everlasting life. You never need to drink again. Never need to drink again if you drink of the water that I give you. Never. You'll be totally life-supported forever with the water of life. Now, having said that, he said, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and the second thing, they have hewn them out since they've eliminated God. You've got to put something in place of God. And they put in that which is useless, of no profit, of no value, none whatsoever. They have hewn them out cisterns. That's that they would dig in the limestone, you know, in the hills, and they would hollow out because when they didn't have city water or something, they didn't have a pump and a well, they would have to have water. And if you were fortunate to be near a stream or a brook, then you would have water flowing all the time. But if you weren't, then you want to have provision made, and you would dig in the ground, limestone, even in solid rock sometime, and they would dig a hole, dig it out, limestone plaster in the limestone rock, and go down and plaster it. And so the rainwater that comes in would flow in to it, and eventually, of course, the limestone and the other would wear away, and the water that you're counting on, the water that you're looking for, when the shortage is there, you go look, and the water is gone. Or what else was true? If you look in, the water is all icky, like soapy, dirty water. It's been sitting there. The bugs and everything, worms, everything's in it. That's what you've got. You're counting on your cistern. You're counting on your little substitute. You're counting on what you're doing. And it is just like you people that hewn out a cistern, a place to hold water. And in the process, when they need it, it isn't there. It isn't there. Now hang on to that part. It just isn't there. Now, having said that, so here's the illustration. They've got rid of God and put in anything and anybody in place of God. And they're doing it rather aggressively, as you'll see. That's the point. Going down, if I can, to verse 19. Thine own wickedness shall correct thee, and thy backsliding shall reprove thee. Know therefore and see that it is an evil thing and bitter. What is evil? There's your word again. And bitter. That thou hast forsaken the Lord thy God, and that my fear, the fear of me, is not in thee, saith the Lord of hosts. It's you did this all by your own wickedness. You made and you created your problem. You blame me. Remember, they tried to blame God. Chapter 2 and verse 5. What iniquity, what did I do wrong? It isn't what I've done wrong, said God. It's what you've done wrong. And you have gone and wronged yourself. You have ruined yourself. And thus, you have no fear, no reverence, no respect for me. Thus, skipping down, if I can, to verse 23. How canst thou say, I am not polluted? How canst thou say, I am not polluted? I have not gone after Baalim. See thy way in the valley, and know what thou hast done. Thou art a swift dromedary, that's a young camel, and transversing his ways. Now, what's a young camel do? Well, a young camel, apart from anything, can be running, and it runs. This means to move to and fro very fast. Camel run over here, turn around and run back, right back across where it did. Guns back and forth across, and you say, don't you know where you're going? And the camel doesn't seem to know anywhere it's going, just keeps crisscrossing where it is. You're like a camel. You're like a camel. You go from one thing to the other. Instead of sticking and locking on to God, which you've left, you are now forced to find many, many solutions, many solutions, as many as you can, and try one, and then you try another one, try another one, try another one, try another one. And that's what you're doing, like a camel. And picking up, verse 24. A wild ass used to the wilderness, that's all it's lived its whole life in the wilderness, that snuffeth up the wind, follows the wind, at her pleasure, does whatever she wants to do, and her occasion, and in occasion, who can turn her away? All they that seek her will not weary themselves. You wouldn't waste your time on that donkey. The donkey is just going to wear you out. The donkey is used to having its own way, the own way, all that it does. And therefore, all the effort, it's going to refuse. The donkey is set on not doing what you want it to do. The donkey is used to doing what it wants to do in the way it wants to do it, when it wants to do it, and there's the donkey out there running all over the place. So don't worry yourself out in trying to help him. You're like that kind of wild ass. You're all over the place. You're useless. You're here, you're there, you're here, you're there. Hang on. And then thus, having said that, verse 25. Withhold thy foot from being unshod, and thy throat from thirst. And that, the issue there is, you're in such a hurry, woman's in such a hurry, you don't put your shoes, you tie your sandals, you don't have time to tie them, you're in such a rush to do the next thing, like the donkey, like the camel, back and forth, all over the place. You're hurry, 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 hurry. Got to do this, I got to do that. And you aren't stopping to think at all. Therefore, and you say, hold it now, stop what you're doing. You slow down, stop. But they don't. Verse 25. But thou sayest, what are they saying? What are they saying? There is no hope. For, why not? For I have loved strangers, and after them I'm going to go. Just like that wild donkey. I'm not going to change. Israel's heart is set in cement. And we're not going to change. God, we're not going to change. We have no hope because we're looking for our lovers, and we're going to keep doing it. I'm not going to fix anything, change anything. This is what I'm going to be doing. You got that attitude? Boy, are they locked in, aren't they? You haven't even got the rest of it. I mean, they're locked in. They're locked in. Wow. Now, thus, verse 26, as the thief, and that's the word for a professional thief. That isn't an amateur thief. That is a professional thief. Someone who is really into thievery. As the thief is ashamed when he is found. And that means not he's got cap. He's disappointed he got caught. He's disappointed he got caught. So is the house of Israel ashamed. They're getting clipped, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to show it all up. They, their kings, their princes, their priests, and their prophets. Now, what were they looking for? What were they saying? Verse 27. Saying to a stock, that's something they make, an idol, thou art my father, and to a stone, thou hast brought me forth. For they have turned their back unto me, and not their face. But in the time of their trouble, they will say, arise and save us. So they're going to try all their solutions. But their solutions aren't going to work. Because no, that which is no God, which is nothing. Nothing can't produce something. How can nothing produce something? Nothing. God can produce it out of nothing. But humans, we can't take nothing and make a solution when there isn't anything to start with. So therefore, they're going to go in trouble and they're going to look for solutions, even get to God. The end of verse 27. But in the time of their trouble, they shall say, arise and save us. But, verse 28, where are thy gods that thou hast made thee? Let them arise. If they can save thee in the time of thy trouble, can they save thee? Well, no. No, you're going to look to them, though. For according to the number of their cities are thy gods, O Judah. You've got as many gods all over the place, all over, like in Egypt and other parts of the world, gods everywhere, all kinds of idols and gods, religious symbols. Let them save you. Now, verse 29. Wherefore will ye plead with me? You're going to come now to me? Ye all have transgressed against me, saith the Lord. In vain I have smitten your children. I've tried to get them to wake up by discipline and everything. It didn't do any good, trial, error, trouble. They received no correction. They never got corrected. You keep spanking, but they keep doing the same thing. Their heart is set. No correction. No correction. Your own sword hath devoured your prophets like a destroying lion. O generation, see ye the word of the Lord. Have I been a wilderness unto Israel, God said? Have I been to you? Did I not take care of your need? I didn't leave you out in the wilderness with nothing. I gave you everything. Gave you everything. Verse 31. See ye the word of the Lord. Have I been a wilderness unto you? Didn't I always take care of you? Surely. A land of darkness? Didn't I always guide you? Did I ever lead you and say, go find your own way? Wasn't I always there to guide you? Now, the statement. We are lords. We will come no more unto thee. We're gods. We don't need to come to you for guidance, for need, for anything. We're our own gods, you see. Back up in verse 29. Wherefore will you plead with me? And that's the same over as in verse 9. Will you contend with me? Will you contend? And they're going to go and say, well, God, we are going to take you to court. You take us to court. We're going to take you to court, God. How's that? God, we're going to take you to court. We're going to strive against you. Oh, my. Now, and thus, verse 32. Can a maid forget her ornaments or a bride her attire? Yet my people have forgotten me days without number. A bride wouldn't proceed forward without the attire. Would I forget you? You have forgotten me. Now, verse 34. Also in thy skirts is found the blood of the souls of the poor innocents, I have not found it in a secret search, but upon all of these. In other words, your sin, your error, your idolatry is so public. It shows up wherever I look. No matter what city, no matter what street, no matter where I look, your idolatry shows up everywhere. It isn't, I don't have to hunt for it. It's all over the place. Now, verse 35. Yet, having said that, it's all over the place, very public. Yet thou sayest, because I am innocent. I'm not guilty of anything. God, what do you think you're doing? I'm comparing myself with others, and I look pretty good. I don't look so bad. I'm not people worse than me. That isn't what God's going to go by. Is that what God's going to go by with you? Who's he going to compare you to? His son. That's who he's going to compare you to. So just compare to other people. God isn't going to compare you to other people. He's going to compare you to his son. What you should have had. What you should have been. He isn't going to compare you to anybody. We do that to protect ourselves. God doesn't do that. Listen to them. Israel, are they bold, brazen? Boom. Verse 35, yet thou sayest, because I am innocent, surely his anger, God's anger, shall turn from me. And really, he isn't angry with us. Whatever his anger was, it must have been yesterday with the people that lived yesterday. He isn't angry with us. He's angry with the people that lived yesterday. We're innocent. Verse 35. But his anger shall turn from me. Behold, I will plead with thee, said God. I'm going to bring you into judgment. Because thou sayest, I have not sinned. You're going to say, I have not sinned. See. Now, what my point that I'm going to try to do, if you would just be in mind, I want you just to, and it's a sobering, if I just read it fast, and if you think about it, let it sink in, Israel if it was me, I'd scrap Israel, and God does, but I'd really scrap them. But you see, I'd just say, forget that crowd. Forget them. Now here's God. God did that. But God's going to judge them. Nebuchadnezzar's coming. Now, and they are a hard-hearted. Now, I want you to, in the light of our study of the character of God, his wonderful grace, person, omnipotence, righteousness, and all of that, I want you to understand, how does God, we just read what God is telling about Israel, and he has to live with that kind of crowd, doesn't he? Isn't he living with that crowd? He's having to handle that crowd by way of Jeremiah. Boy, God. God is grieving, being grieved and limited, restrained by Israel. Now, God, I want to get that import upon my life. I don't want to be like that, God. I don't want to do that to you. I just read what Israel does to you. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be one. I don't want to. I determined not to know anything among you what? As Paul entered the great cosmopolitan city of Corinth, I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and what? Him crucified. And when I read that, I know we did a lot. Jeremiah is a hard thing to make very wonderfully simple for you because it's very involved. But at least you might hear a little, and I got this much from me, from my heart. God, I don't want to be like that. I don't want that attitude. I don't want to have that so stubborn, so set, so stupid that I miss out. I miss out. I leave you totally out of my life, and you are the source of my life. I don't want to be that and look for other things to save me, keep me, help me, encourage me. I don't want to be looking all over the place to try to make my life work. Home, work, school, play, health, wealth, money, coming, going, easy, hard, much, little. God, I don't want to get caught up in that. I don't want to lose you in it. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is what? Stayed on thee, God. Over in closing, if you would, to Colossians. Colossians. Colossians in chapter 1. That's what I got out of that for my heart. I don't want to be like that. God, help me from being like that. I don't want to. I shudder. God, if I could insult you like that, after all you've done and all you're doing right now, God, in your wonderful character, person, you're being wonderfully God now. I don't want to louse it up. Colossians 1, our prayer. Verse 9, for this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God. I don't want to leave you out, God. I want to make sure you're in. Strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering and with joyfulness. Giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet or fit to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath transplanted us into the kingdom of his dear Son. God, I want that. That's what I want to pray, God. I don't know about all the rest of it, and our whole society is what? His society, Jeremiah's, his society, the world around him, and Israel within, was negative against God. The world encouraged the idolatry of Israel. Israel encouraged the idolatry of the world by doing it, didn't they? The minute we start doing what the world does, we're encouraging them. We're encouraging them to do the same thing. And here we are, God. Here we are in our day. And God, the world isn't. The world isn't interested. Every week, every month, you're going to see less and less of any interest in biblical truth, of God in Christ and Christ in God. A lot of religion, people coming and going all over the place. But to sit down and say, God, I owe you, you're the only God there is. And I'm either going to know you rightly by way of your Son, or I'm going to be stupid about the whole thing. But I'm not going to go and substitute anyone. I'd rather have nothing. I'll trust nothing. If I don't know you, God, I'm not going to put anything in your place. I want that place like the Athenians. I want the stone there where the idol, where you have a stone for God, an idol, a place to put a God. I want that in my heart empty, so that it's there for you. I don't want to fill it with some idol or some solution. I want it empty. If I'm not going to put you in the place that you need to be, then God, I'm going to keep that place empty. And I'll have no God. You're the only God. And until you get that place, God, I'm not putting anyone there except you. Now help me get there. Help me to get to that place. It's a wonderful thing, God. And Israel, God is going to help Israel. God is helping us. We have a wonderful God. We sit in his presence. Wonderfully so. Two or three would like to lead us, please, as such in prayer, if you would. We're living in that kind of day, dear friend. And you're going to have to say, am I going to be like a Jeremiah? Or am I going to get caught up in the stupid system? And I lose the fervor, the fire, the fruitfulness, the freshness, the zeal to be God's, for God to be who you are, all that you are in my little life, God. We'll pray.